kids suck. My name is Jason. I am the last manager of the last video store in the universe. Binge Movies in sunny tropical Akron, Ohio. And you have us to thank for your everyday existence, because without us holding back the darkness that tries to make its way through the breach via the power of the home video revolution, you and everything you love would be gone. The folks over at Radio Silence, or the folks who make up Radio Silence, if that's what you want to call it, something, have presented a new film called Abigail, and I'm going to talk about it because I just left the movie theater where I watched it and mostly enjoyed it. If you want these instant reactions even more instantaneously and a little bit extended, go to Binge Movies. That's not right. Go to patreon.com/bingemovies. patreon.com/bingemovies. Okay, Abigail. This one's a tough one. If you haven't seen a trailer, if you haven't seen a teaser, if you don't know anything about the movie, don't listen to anything I want to say, because the entire movie hinges upon a twist, which was unfortunately ruined by the marketing for the film, I think for good reason. I'll get into that here in a second. A film like Abigail is really difficult to market. It's very difficult to find its audience, and here's why. It is a film starring Dan Stevens and Melissa Barrera and, oh my gosh, the young lady who is either the new Ant Girl, whatever her name is, let's see here, or the old one that they got rid of for some reason, who replaced the real young one who was cute from the Ant-Man movies. I'll have to find out here in a second. I'm talking about Catherine Newton, of course. My God, of course. And I feel like she's the new, we know her from Lisa Frankenstein, Freaky. Yeah, she's the new Ant-Man's daughter in Ant-Man and the Wasp. This might be, I really liked her in Lisa Frankenstein. I thought she was the standout for a movie that was kind of, I don't know. Yeah. Well, anyway, she plays Cassie in Ant-Man. But she's racking up a resume of sort of cult movies that might end up taking a, gaining an audience at home video and gaining appreciation over time. I think Lisa Frankenstein's probably going to be one of those. And I think Abigail maybe as well. But we'll see. We'll see how it does at the box office. There's more to the cast. Giancarlo Esposito shows up for a cup of coffee and a handful of other people. This is a tough one, right? Because it is a really novel concept. It's one of those movies that when you hear the pitch, you go, oh yeah, that's really clever, and I can't believe no one's made a movie like this yet. It's so smart, and you do a lot of really fun stuff with that sort of concept. It's actually maybe two or three of those stacked on top of each other, which I think is maybe the movie's a little bit of its problem, but also kind of what makes it special in a way. Let me explain. The movie is essentially a gang of people who don't know each other, who are all hired to do a job, are brought together to capture a girl who is the child of a wealthy parents, and for ransom. And so you have the wheel guy, you got the hacker, you've got the muscle, you've got the leader, you know, kind of the strategist, you know, you've got the sharpshooter, the lookout, you've got all these people fulfilling all these different heist movie roles and heist movie cliches and this sort of thing, crime movie cliches. And then there's the guy who's put the entire deal together. It's very much like a Baby Driver situation or Italian Job or anything like that. And they end up successfully kidnapping the girl. And that's supposed to be the hardest part of the job. And in all these movies, that ends up being the coolest, easiest, slickest part of the job until everything starts to go wrong. Because that's what makes a heist movie interesting. That's what makes a movie like Ronin or anything else like that. Again, like the Italian Job, you know, kind of interesting, right? It's like what happens after the fight? Thief is another good one. Great example of this. Well, that's more of a solo movie, but kind of, you know, there's other characters. And, you know, there's not the stereotype or the cliche, rather, of this is just one last job. Although there kind of is with one of the characters, like, one job and I'll finally be able to go home. I guess it is kind of in here. So that's the movie, right? And essentially it asked the question, what if the person you kidnapped, with this little girl you kidnapped, what if you kidnapped Kaiser Soze's daughter from Usual Suspects? What if you kidnapped the god of the underworld, the god of the crime world, who the man who is connected to the highest and most powerful people in the world, who is a secret underground billionaire, multi-billionaire, all-powerful antichrist? Was a great line in the movie. It's like, let's just go out here and, you know, and tell the antichrist we're sorry and we made a mistake and let's meet up for a round of golf sometime, you know. And it was a pretty good line. But yeah, what if you've accidentally wronged the antichrist? Sure, he's got the $50 million, but there's no fucking way you're ever going to get that money. That's enough for a movie right there. Like, that is a solid enough premise for, you know, a handful of unlucky pros trying to do the minimum to get into a bunch of money. They don't just cross a dangerous guy. They cross the most dangerous man in the world, the most dangerous evil man in the world. And essentially, that's kind of what the first 45 minutes of the film is. The movie's about an hour, 15 minutes. That's more or less what the first act is, maybe even beginning of the second act. And that takes up almost an hour of the film. And all that stuff is fine. All of that stuff is pretty good. It's not groundbreaking stuff. It's trafficking a lot of cliches. And then there is, and again, this is the point of no return, so I'm going to spoil it. But again, the trailers already did. There is a twist. The twist isn't just that this girl's father, Abigail's father, is the most dangerous criminal in the world. It's also that she, Abigail, is a vampire. And they are trapped in this house where they, you know, their safe house isn't a safe house. It is a trap. And they are now rats in a cage in this big spooky mansion, being hunted down by a little girl who is not actually a little girl. She's a monster. And, you know, and then there were none, which is a very on the nose sort of reference that gets picked up later in the movie. And we don't even really get to that immediately. There's something's in here with us, or somebody's in here with us. And, you know, who's double crossing who. And it still kind of revolves around the idea of a heist movie as it slowly begins to implement more and more horror imagery and ideas and deaths and so forth and so on. And this is a very bloody, gory, guts and gore and viscera sort of film. It's a splatter film in a lot of ways. And so you have two problems with this from like a writing perspective. You know, problem number one is you can write a great script around this concept. I think we got a pretty decent one here, I would say. And a great pitch to a studio, kind of a high concept, like, okay, imagine this. And you can hear the elevator pitch almost in the, just by me saying what I've said. And certainly if you've watched the trailer is like the elevator pitch. But then the studio's got to market it. So do we market it with like kind of B, C, D tier actors in a generic heist movie about kidnapping a little girl and they accidentally cross the wrong mob boss? That just feels... it doesn't feel like a movie I need to rush out to theaters to see. It feels like a movie that, like, I don't know, like Pacino would maybe make 5-10 years ago, or De Niro, like straight to DVD, like straight to Redbox. It feels like, wait a minute, when did Don Cheadle and, I don't know who else, Mark Wahlberg make this movie? Mark Wahlberg doesn't really do a lot of straight-to-video movies, but you know what I mean. I wouldn't say Bruce Willis, but he's kind of out of that now due to serious health issues. But it's a sort of, Bruce Willis is going to vaguely be in it for maybe 5 minutes sitting in a chair, you know? Like, you could see it being that. It isn't. It's a better movie than that. But it's a bigger budgeted movie than that, too. But it just kind of has, if that was just the premise delivered to you without stars in it, there's no real way to market it. And also, if people do turn up for it, they're going to be turned up for a crime movie. And it's not really a crime drama. It's a crime dramedy that morphs its way into a splatter horror film. So you kind of want to let your splatter audience know, hey, there's going to be a lot of blood and guts. But so what ends up happening is you have to market the movie around the idea, around revealing the magic trick. So I guarantee you it was not the writer's intentions for us to know going into the movie that by act two there was going to be a genre flip. And I think the movie would have been all that much more successful if you didn't know that. Because it's fun as it is, but there is a sense of like we're kind of waiting around for the turn. And it's pleasant enough. It's not like, okay, oh my God, get on with it. You know, there's enough character stuff, but it's a lot of beats we've seen before. Everybody's kind of got a secret past, and little by little things begin to come out about them. And who can you really trust? And who's double-crossing who? And is this guy really who he says he is? And it, again, it's cliche stuff, but it's done fairly well. It's got a verve to it. It's got energy to it. It's not languid until it gets to the Abigail turn. And then once Abigail turns, quite literally, it's blood, guts, and gore. And I think the movie mostly succeeds on both fronts. I wish the twist would have been somehow concealed. The problem with a lot of high concept movies, and this is a problem, by the way, that like comic book movies run into as well, because comic book movies are often genre mashup high concept films just by their nature. Is that at the end of the day, no matter how clever your concept is, the third act is pretty much going to end up being what the third act is going to be, right? It's going to be a punch 'em up by the end of the movie. And that's kind of what this ends up being. There's a lot of kind of, the word I would use is clever. It's not necessarily smart, but there's cleverness. There's a lot of like little things, little decisions that are made throughout the course of the film that make it interesting. And there's a lot of things that fall into place in act two going into the beginning of act three that are really fun and creative and a really enjoyable time watching a movie. This is a really kind of easy, enjoyable film to watch, right? It's not a mind bender, nor is it a piece of crap, right? It's not the greatest thing you've ever seen with so many intricacies, but it's also not completely stupid. It's a nice, solid, middle-of-the-run B movie with some good actors and some good performances. I think all the performances are excellent. I think this is the best work of Melissa Barrera's career. I don't really care for her in the Scream movies. I think she's really, really good here. Angus Cloud, who has since passed away, delivers a spot-on sort of modern character that feels very, very obnoxious, but very much in a way of, I meet about five of those guys every single day in my life. They're just out here in public, and he just sort of nails it. So rest in peace to him. I think Abigail herself, who's played by Alicia Weir. Alicia Weir is 14 years old, and perfectly cast, and let me explain why. Because she's this little girl, and she looks like a little girl, but she is really into ballet. And when you put makeup on her and you put her hair a certain way, and the way she speaks and her performance in the film, she looks like that. And I don't know if there's digital trickery here or not, but she looks like an older woman playing a younger girl. Like if you told me she was 18 or 19 playing 14, just by the way she expresses herself, the way she carries her body language, I would believe that. Like maybe not 25, but if you're like, man, she's like even 21, she just looks really young for age. That's what it felt like. It felt like they got somebody who looked 10 years younger than she really was to play the role. Instead, she actually is kind of Abigail's age, maybe a few years older. So she carries this sort of sophistication and at the same time, childlike vulnerability with her, which is what the character needs. So she does an excellent job. But sometimes when you get in these movies, though, like once you get to the third act, like what do you do with it? Like you're all out of cleverness. There's no more clever. You just have to deliver a satisfying conclusion. And I suppose this movie does, although it has echoes of other movies that Radio Silence has been involved in. And yeah, it just, it, there are subtle cheats, I guess is what I would call them, where you're shifting, moving characters in certain positions because you need certain things in the plot to happen by the third act. And so I think the third act is by far the weakest. And I think the last 10, 15 minutes are extraordinarily repetitive. There's a couple of really stupid boneheaded decisions I'll get further into for patrons over at patreon.com/bingemovies. But other than that, like, those are my criticisms. My criticisms are, this would have been a kick-ass film if you didn't know the vampire twist at the beginning of the film, or going into the film. This is a well-acted film that the script sort of lets its own characters down. After being kind of clever and a little cheeky and a little smarter than the average horror movie, it then just goes into a lot of crime movie cliches and some horror movie cliches that I wish it had maintained the consistency of its brightness throughout the end. But still, I think this is a fun movie. It's got blood, guts, humor, some jokes, but never to the point where the jokes cause the jokes are sort of like situational, character based. They're not tonal jokes. It's not a complete breakdown of the horror elements, I guess. Practical set, great practical set for this mansion that's all set in. I think this is a very, very fun movie. I think it's a movie that would play perfect on a Saturday or Friday night with a couple of friends. It's probably going to be on Peacock if that's available in your country within the next month. I don't know that you want to rush out to the theaters to see it, although, of course, always support your local movie theater. If you're looking for, we're kind of in this lull where there's stuff coming, but it's not, we haven't hit the huge stuff. And then also look at the slate this year. Like, Dune's kind of the biggest movie of the entire year thus far, and the next huge one's probably going to be Deadpool 3 or Deadpool and Wolverine. So if you're like, it's been a while since I've been in the movies, I'm just looking to get out, I would definitely recommend it. In a Letterboxd scale, I give it 3.5 stars. I could be negotiated into a 3, but I find it pleasant overall, up until the third act, which begins to waver. Doesn't quite stick the landing for me, but I would recommend it. If you are a patron, this review rolls on. If not, until next time, binge on.